Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State, providing access to the most advanced cancer treatments available from a team specialized in treating just one type of cancer, yours. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/choosethejames.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. This is Fascinating Ohio, a show from All Sides and WOSU, where we introduce you to people from the Buckeye State with an interesting story to tell. If you talk to a teacher, most of them will say they don't go into the profession for the fame or fortune. They become teachers because they're called to it. They like interacting with kids, they're good at it, and they feel at home passing knowledge on to a new generation. But from time to time, a teacher is recognized for his or her work, and sometimes, on very rare occasions, that recognition is pretty big. This year, Chris Monsoor, a high school science teacher from Tiffin City Schools, was named Ohio's Teacher of the Year. And he's here today to discuss his career and this recognition. Welcome to All Sides, Chris.
Good morning. How are you, Amy?
Congratulations. What was your reaction when you found out you were selected as Teacher of the Year?
I was surprised. I've been teaching for 27 years. And so, you know, meeting some of the other teachers who had applied, I was like, I'm not sure if I got this. You know, I mean, a little imposter syndrome, you know, I just wasn't sure, but I was very excited and very honored when I was selected.
Now, my understanding is your whole school found out, they thought they were just going to like an assembly or a pep rally or something. And then they found out that why they were there was to announce that you had been selected. What did your students think? How did they react?
Well, that's correct. I had found out a week or two ahead of time. And so they had to come up with a ruse, so to speak, to get all the students there to surprise them. And so, you know, to have a pep rally at 1 o'clock on a Thursday is not your norm. So the students were like, they'd use it to talk about PBIS, but they were excited for me. They clapped, the band was there, the whole staff was there. It was kind of overwhelming in a good way, but to hear my students cheering for me really kind of got me a little bit. I was cutting onions or something, but anyways, it was awesome. And so it was a really great experience because as a teacher, I'm always usually standing on the sidelines or off to the side during a pep rally. And here I was in the middle. And so I was a little nervous, not going to lie, but it was awesome.
And you mainly teach science, right? Is there certain, what type of science do you teach, or do you have a favorite that you teach?
Well, I teach AP bio, I teach anatomy physiology, and then I teach like the on-level biology. I teach honors biology. There's been years where I've taught Oceanus here in Ohio. So oceanography in Ohio is a little bit of a challenge, but, I really like biology. My background is in biology. I did not go to school originally to be a teacher. I went to be, I did a lot of work on Lake Erie with invasive species. And so I just kind of happened to fall into teaching. I did the alternative route back in 1999. So, so I teach science to kids. I teach students, I teach them science, but so that's kind of my route.
Have you always been with Tiffin or did you work in a different district?
All 27 years have been here at Tiffin. I graduated from Heidelberg University in 1999. I had every intention of going off to graduate school for environmental policy. Didn't work out. I was waiting tables in August at a restaurant here in town in Tiffin. Waited on the superintendent. She's like, "Hey, you're new here." I wasn't a very good waiter, by the way. I was like, "Yeah, I just graduated." She's like, "You want to try subbing?" I'm like, "How hard can it be?" So I went in as a long-term sub because they had a science teacher that had resigned like in August. And so it's kind of hard to find teachers then. And I really loved it. So I kind of, like I said, I kind of fell into the position. I subbed and then I went back and got my credentials. But yeah, I've been with Tiffin all 27 years, pretty much in the same room. But I love what I do. I love my students. I love who I work with.
And do you know anything about who nominated you or what the criteria were for you to be picked as Teacher of the Year?
So my understanding of the nomination was we had our curriculum director, Laura Bryant, another teacher I worked, Jen Musgrave, and I think our superintendent were involved in the nomination process. And so what that entailed was there was 5 essays I had to respond to. I had to submit my resume. I had to get 3 letters of recommendation. And then Ohio is broken up into 11 districts for teaching or for State Board of Education purpose. I'm District 1. So my application went to all of the committee for District 1. They selected me as the District 1 Teacher of the Year. So there's 11 Teachers of the Year for the districts. I was narrowed down to the top four candidates. And then I had to go down to Columbus the first week of August. Had to give like a TED talk for about 15 minutes to a group of people that tell them like what my vision was for teachers here in Ohio. Like if I had to send a message out to the teachers in Ohio, what I would send. And then, yeah. And then a week later, I get this, I thought I was going in for a meeting and up pops the state superintendent, Paul Kraft. Like, hey, I go, this is not what I was expecting. So.
This is Fascinating Ohio from All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking with Ohio's 2026 Teacher of the Year, Chris Monsor. So what was that vision for teachers that you laid out whenever you were kind of, getting interviewed for, you know, the selection committee? What do you think is the future for teachers?
The main idea I wanted teachers to understand is you need to stay the course. You know, there's a lot of changes, whether it's with technology, other factors. So my main thought was stay the course, remember why you're in teaching, you know, focus on your students, find, I have five of them, but I won't go through all five, but like, you know, be a lifelong learner, make sure that you bring your experiences into the classroom so your kids can see that, you know, you have a balance between work and life and let them see what you're doing. I also talked about the fact that we need to embrace technology and that we should not necessarily look at it as a bad thing. I've had, you know, I use AI a little bit in my class, but mostly it's for like, I have students where you might be, English might be their second language. AI has opened up the ability for them to, you know, embrace with, interact with text that they may not have been able to. But also, you know, we got to focus on teaching students holistically, you know, with mental health and academics and including families. So, that's not how I would have liked to presented it to you, but that's kind of that idea, but we need to stay the course. Our students are showing up. We need to show up for them and we need to provide the best possible educational experience that we can.
And if you've been 26 years in the same school district, I'm sure, have you noticed changes in the students over the years? You mentioned mental health, academics, family connections. What have you seen as changes in your students?
So, you know, I teach biology and the thing that I always tell my students is, you know, change is the only constant in life. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, coming out of the lockdown or whatnot and spending so much time on the computers, I think our students have maybe been disengaged a little bit with communication with each other. So I see the focus and spending so much time on the cell phones has been kind of a change, but fortunately we're getting away from that now with the new regulation about not having cell phones in the classroom. But I'm starting to see that, you know, the reliance on the computer and reliance on their technology has kind of been one of the main factors. In terms of mental health, you have to have a human connection. We're humans. We need that human connection. We need interaction. You know, you just don't get that through social media. Social media has its purpose, but I really think the loss of that human connection, what makes us human, has been lost a little bit. And so trying to reteach them some of those skills about how to talk to each other, how to interact. And, you know, the biggest thing also with some of the social media is that the students are so wrapped up sometimes on like how many likes they get or, you know, what someone may say on social media. So I think the biggest factor is the negative impact that technology has had. And so trying to refocus on the positives of social media. So that's kind of where I the greatest change is. Now technology has benefit. I mean, like I said, I've been able to open up worlds to students who may not have had access, but the social interaction, I think, has been the biggest change.
In your role as Teacher of the Year, you're going to be asked to speak about some of the more troubling issues in education, chronic absenteeism, test scores, school funding difficulties. In your opinion, what is the biggest challenge facing Ohio schools today?
The biggest challenge, the best thing to do is kind of focus on the positives, because I think we've always had challenges. It's just been, you know, depending on what is current in the time. So as Teacher of the Year, I don't want to focus on negatives. My goal is to focus on positives. And so I don't know if I can pick one, but I would like to focus on the fact that, you know, our kids are showing up. We're showing up. We still have, 90% of Ohio schools, we're rated a three or above. And so instead of, trying to find a challenge, I think we need to look at what we're doing right and continue doing that, and using what we're doing right and apply it to maybe some of the things that we are seeing as challenges, because challenges might also be district to district as well. So I wish I had a nice, easy answer for that one, but I'm not an expert on all those things.
I was looking at some of the comments on the Tiffin School's Facebook page, speaking of social media, when your award was announced. And one person, Jesse, wrote that you rented an apartment off of her years ago and you weren't planning on staying in Tiffin very long. And then she wrote, "Look at him now. He never gave up on Tiffin." So how do you feel about Tiffin? Not just the schools, but the community.
I love the community. I'm originally from Brookfield, Ohio, which is a small school, small town in Trumbull County. And so, but Tiffin, I went to college at Heidelberg, and the community's embraced me. It's a small community, but they supported me. If I've ever needed anything for a classroom, they've supported me. It's a very welcoming community. The school's been very supportive. I mean, sometimes I ask to do stuff in the class and they're like, "Sure, we'll make it work." So it's kind of funny going back to Jesse, because I was only going to teach for a year, and my plan was my teach for a year and then move on. And then I just kind of fell in love with the school and the community. So like, if I count my college years, I've been here 31 years. And so it is a great place to live. The schools are great. They have challenges just like every school does, but they've been very supportive, and they've never really told me no in terms of as long as I'm doing something that's going to benefit the kids, they're very supportive. And so the community wants what is best for the students. I want what's best for the students. And so, yeah, I didn't give up on Tiffin. They haven't given up on me. And, I still got some years in me.
Another funny comment was from Cindy, who said, "Not the greatest bartender I ever employed, but certainly the greatest teacher that ever left my employment." She said, she added that she's happy to be a part of your origin story. So it sounds like you have a great community there.
They do. And I like to think that I have a good, I have a pretty good sense of humor. Because I teach high school kids, 16, 17, 18 year olds. And so I have a good sense of humor. And so I do appreciate that. Cindy, yes. When I worked at the restaurant, I would wait tables. I also bartend, and didn't know what I was doing, got thrown into it, did the best I could. But yeah, my origin story, I didn't go the traditional route. And so, I went to a small high school. Probably by every definition, I would be considered an at-risk kid at that time, but we didn't have that kind of designation back in the early 90s. And, I came from nothing, and here I am. I'm Ohio Teacher of the Year. And by every account, if I were to, go down the checklist of, what I should be doing, I should not be talking to you today. Mm-hmm. But I had a very supportive school, supportive friends and family. And, I stuck with it. I knew my only way out of my situation was to make myself better. And so here I am, Ohio Teacher of the Year. And I'm going to enjoy this next year, and I'm going to share my story. And hopefully, people that are students that are kind of down or, not having the best experience, be like, "Listen, you can do it. You can get out of the chaos, and, you could be in a similar situation, Ohio Teacher of the Year."
One last comment that I'll say is that someone wrote that their daughter's love of science grew in your class, and now she's studying science in college. What's it feel like? When you see the spark in a student, you got them to love science. What's that like?
It's that aha moment that we talk about. And it's just the fact was, when we teach science, I'm trying to teach my students to be critical thinkers. We're not just passively learning, we're actively learning in class. And so I think once they see that science is not just memorizing DNA structure or chemical formulas, that it's actual a process, it's something that you do every day, they get that spark. And so I really try to bring in everyday experiences that my students can relate to, because someday, they're going to be parents or they're going to be working in a field. And so I think that the more that they understand about how science works and how nature, that they really do appreciate it, because we are a part of science. We're not separate from it. We're a part of it. And I really try to get to my students that we're part of this system. You have to learn how it works, because when it doesn't work, when someone gets sick or whatever, you have to make some decisions, and hopefully they're made on sound, sound facts or evidence that you've collected. And so that aha moment, it's like, they get it. And what I'm doing is worthwhile. And what I'm doing is correct or is right.
We've been talking with Ohio's 2026 Ohio Teacher of the Year, Chris Monsoor. Chris, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much, Amy. You're my first interview, so hopefully, this was really special. So I'm glad you brought me on, and and I just want to say, if those other teachers that are out there in Ohio, keep doing what you're doing. You're doing a great job, and just stay the course and keep your, do what's best for your students. So again, thank you so much, Amy.
Yeah, congratulations. Enjoy your Teacher of the Year reign. thanks for your time. And coming up, we're going to meet an app developer who came up with a big idea while helping his brother recover from a traumatic injury. That's when Fascinating Ohio continues from All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. This is Fascinating Ohio, a show from All Sides and WOSU, where we introduce you to people from the Buckeye State with an interesting story to tell. When a medical trauma changes your life, where do you turn for help? There's the physical recovery, the emotional toll, and the endless questions of how to adjust to a new normal. The Kalina family went through that more than a decade ago. And out of that experience, Matt Kalina of Lakewood founded Tandem Stride to help other trauma survivors. Joining us now is Matt Kalina, founder and CEO of Tandem Stride. Welcome to All Sides, Matt.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So it was your brother, Mark, who sustained a life-threatening injury. This was back in 2012. Can you tell me what happened to him?
Yeah, it will be 13 years in a couple weeks. So my brother, older brother, Mark, he's a year and 6 months older than I am. We were both undergrads at Ohio State. And one night after he went out, he was walking back to his apartment on campus and came across some railroad tracks. There was a train stopped on the tracks, and he decided to backtrack around the stopped train to try to find an opening to cross to get back to his apartment. Lost his footing, got his shirt sleeve snagged on the side of a rail car. And at that moment, the train kicked into motion, and it started pulling him backwards. And before too long, it got too fast for him to keep up with, and he ended up getting knocked down on the train, fell between the rails, pushed himself to the center of the track, and covered his head until the train passed over. Soon after the train passed, which I'm assuming felt like forever, he turned over and noticed that one of his legs was missing, pulled out his phone and called 911. And continued to wave down a helicopter and a team of first responders that pulled him off the tracks, first him and then his legs. And now a 13-year journey of recovery and reclaiming independence is something that we get to look back on and be proud of the progress that's been made. But it certainly wasn't an easy journey.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. I'm so sorry that happened. But I'm sure that your family had a lot to navigate after this. I mean, you don't expect something like that to happen. What were some of the big questions and challenges that you and your family faced as you tried to help Mark, because he's now navigating life as a double amputee?
Yeah, honestly, there's so much. I never knew anyone that had lost a limb before, so everything was new to us. We received amazing emergency care at OSU's Wexner Medical Center. My brother did his inpatient rehab at Dodd Rehab Hospital, and because we were here for school. I think, there's sort of a celebration that happens when you leave the hospital. But the reality is that's the scariest time. you're transitioning back to home. And in this sense, my brother was moving back to Cleveland to move into my mom's dining room because he needed a lot of help for the next few months while he sort of figured out what his new life was going to be like. And normally that's a point of celebration, like finally you're out of the hospital. But very quickly, real life comes into focus. And, you know, getting food, like living your life, it's like a lot harder because a nurse is not a call button away. Mm. Thankfully, my mom was a nurse for 30 plus years. And her dining room turned into a hospital room that probably rivals some of those that you'll see in hospitals. But it took our whole family to gather around him. My aunt would drive him to appointments. My dad's coworkers built a ramp because he was in a wheelchair for a few months after his injury before he got up on prosthetic legs. And, you know, the physical recovery is one component of it, but the psychosocial needs of trauma survivors is something that's often overlooked or isn't really thought about during the emergency care phase. I mean, emergency medicine is focused on saving lives. And really, as soon as people are stable, getting them out of there because they have more lives to save. Mm. And so when you get back at home, you have so many questions that are very difficult to find answers to, because we felt like we were dealing with this, you know, for us, it was the first time. Mm-hmm. And it was probably the only time, hopefully, that we'll ever have to do this. So there were so many questions that we're just like, is this normal? And there was no one to ask that to.
And so I'm guessing this is where the idea that you had for the app came from. So you were looking for people who had a similar experience, right, to ask the questions.
Absolutely. We started a nonprofit shortly after my brother's accident. And that was the resounding theme of every other. We'd raise money and buy people adaptive devices that had a similar injury to my brother. And the same thing was felt by everybody. It's extremely isolating because the survivor themselves, you know, I would say things to my brother like, it's going to be okay. the reality was, I didn't know.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we noticed that happening a lot. And we realized with our nonprofit work, there's only a certain amount of people that we can help. But what there is this fundamental breakdown in lived experience. There's millions of people every year that go to the emergency department with some sort of injury. Mm-hmm. And all of them are dealing with it and figuring it out for the first time. So what we need to do is bring people together and share their lived experience with each other. And, you know, when my brother volunteered at a level one trauma center to visit patients that were newly injured up in Cleveland after he got, you know, a little bit more recovered. It was such a rewarding experience for him. Mm. But for those new injured patients, it was like looking into a time machine. They got to see what life might be like a few years or a few months out of their time in the hospital. Because when you're laying there in the hospital bed, you're thinking about all the things you might not be able to do. And it's really unclear because every vision you had of yourself was able-bodied and not in the circumstance that you're currently in. So you have to kind of rethink, what the heck is my future going to be like? Mm. It's really hard to tell.
So you named your company Tandem Stride. What's the significance of that name?
Tandem Stride, the reason we picked that name was, you know, we think of tandem like you're working together with somebody. And that's a true, like, social isolation is a big challenge when you're going through a recovery like this. So we felt it was important to highlight, you know, these are people that have walked this path before that are here with you. And the stride is, I mean, it's one foot in front of the other. It's leaning into the challenge that you have. And we felt that was the best way to encapsulate what the sort of feeling of this program should be like. It's you with a partner making strides into what your new normal life can be like. And I think that's, you know, remained consistent as we've continued to make these connections and connect people with recovery.
And it's not just amputees. There can be other injuries, too.
No, it sort of runs the gamut. Anybody that goes to an emergency department or is admitted to, like, an inpatient hospital environment because of some sort of physical injury. What we've found is that, you know, even if you're not in the hospital for a long time, oftentimes those people have bigger challenges. We talk to a lot of gunshot wound survivors that don't even stay overnight in the hospital. But the circumstances of that injury are really complicated. There's a lot of psychosocial needs that sort of are contextualized in that. And when you spend less time in the hospital, my brother was there for weeks, maybe months, you get prepared a little bit more for home. When you're in the hospital, the average length of stay in the hospital for a trauma survivor is 4 days.
Really?
So in less than a week, you've got to get home and figure out how you're going to live this new life. And, you know, hopefully you're listening while you're on medication and going in and out of surgeries on how to change your bandages and stuff like that.
Wow. This is Fascinating Ohio from All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about finding peer support for trauma recovery with Matt Kalina, founder and CEO of Tandem Stride. So I saw a Cleveland.com article that quoted Dr. Grant Tinkoff, who worked with your company as the president of the American Trauma Society. He commented on how important peer-to-peer support is that Tandem Stride is able to help with rehabilitation. So tell us how this works. Do people talk to each other? Are they texting? Like, I guess explain a little background of the app.
Yeah. So this is like peer support is not a new concept. It's used in a lot of other areas. I think the reality is there's kind of like in many cases, especially in trauma, there's like a white coat syndrome. Like, am I supposed to talk to my doctor about this?
Mm.
And when you're trying to figure out like what's dating going to be like or when am I going to go back to work? Sometimes those aren't easy things to discuss with your doctor. So the peer support is a really easy and low friction way for people to just have a conversation about life with someone that's been through it. And it's actually been very well researched. My brother was a peer mentor at a level one trauma center in Cleveland, and he did that for 10 years. And they did a lot of research on patients that have an injury, connecting with somebody who's a couple years post the date of their injury. It's on some version of their recovery journey. And the adherence to follow-up care and all this stuff is really, really, really valuable in those connections. The challenge with the way that a lot of these programs exist is you'd have to like, if my brother was volunteering that day, lucky enough, if you weren't in surgery or your parents weren't visiting you to make that connection. So we built out a mobile app that would allow a patient or their family member to create a profile. And then we have a national network of trauma survivors with lived experience in any sort of injury from falls, motor vehicle crashes, gunshot wounds that want to provide that connection and share what they've learned along their journey. And we do that digitally, virtually, and open up communication between a new survivor and a trained peer mentor that can help them navigate some of the challenges and questions that come up in their early stages of their recovery.
So your brother was a mentor to people, but I guess this app didn't exist, so he didn't have a mentor for himself. Did someone come visit him in the hospital?
As we went through, he didn't have anyone that visited him in the hospital. Since my brother's injury, the research on peer support during your hospital stay or shortly thereafter has really taken hold. Mm-hmm. The American College of Surgeons, which is the accrediting body for trauma centers, they released the standards of care for the injured patient. Mm-hmm. And they've actually encouraged a level one and level two trauma centers, which are the ones that get the ambulances and the helicopters that come to them, to have a peer support or a survivor program to support community reintegration after injury. That just came out a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. So now there's a lot of other centers that see the value in peer support, but they're trying to figure out, how do I implement this? So that's where we ran into this. I saw my brother's work in Cleveland and realized it's a capture issue. I come from a healthcare technology background. The average trauma survivor is like 35 years old. They're very literate. They do most of their stuff on their phone. And when I asked my brother, what were you doing when we weren't visiting? He's like, I was Google searching. I was on Instagram trying to find people that had lost their legs because I didn't even know what prosthetics were.
Mm.
And so I realized that when people are there and they have that time, they're looking for that connection. And if you don't have someone in your friend or family circle, it's almost impossible to find that. So thinking about how we can use technology with an audience that's very comfortable with it, younger people that find themselves in these traumatic injury situations seem like a very natural fit to open up a window and create a community that can sort of evolve the way this system of care works.
How are you getting the word out to people? I mean, will hospitals tell patients about Tandem Stride? Do they know to do that?
Yeah. So just over the last couple of weeks, we did some work in Ohio. We went to over 11 different trauma centers from Cincinnati, Dayton, Columbus, Youngstown, Akron, Cleveland, Toledo in 4 days. And a lot of those are partners of ours. And we educate them on how to make peer connection a standard in the discharge process. So nobody has to go home feeling alone. So we give them resources to educate patients and their family members. We even have survivors, you know, like my brother. We have an amazing survivor. She's a plane crash survivor, actually. She goes into the hospital and talks to patients at the bedside and let them know about this program to stay connected. So we do that grassroots effort. We also work with some insurance companies. And when one of their members has an injury, you know, we'll send them information and say, hey, there's this program here that can help you get connected with resources or just give you someone to talk to. So there's many different ways that we're using the existing systems of care to let people know that support is out there for them. And I'm sure that will continue to evolve. I mean, we did a program a couple weeks ago where we went and knocked on people's doors. Because when you go home after a traumatic injury, a lot of times you're not going back to work right away. And that's when the isolation sets in, is when you're sitting at home thinking about your injury and how it's impacted your life. So we're finding every way that we can to educate as many people about this. And even, you know, this interview is a great way to get the word out.
Is the app free?
The app is absolutely free. You can download it on the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store.
Okay. And you also have a component that's called Tandem Guides. Is that different?
Yeah. Tandem Guides is like an evolution of the program. So at first, what we did was like, let's let people talk. Let's just connect trauma survivors with trauma survivors and see what they say. And over the last few months, we've done that for over 5,000 Ohioans across 87 of the 88 counties in Ohio. And what we did was we cataloged all the things that they were bringing up as the primary challenges that they felt were impeding their recovery. And one of the things, what we noticed was a lot of people brought up social determinants of health, like, I don't know how to get to my appointment. So transportation needs. How am I going to get groceries? So food insecurity. I can't pay my rent. I'm back on my utilities because I haven't been able to go back to work. So we actually launched the Tandem Guides program to not only match people with the peer mentor that is already a free and basic component of our infrastructure, but also match them with a resource navigator or even a social worker that can help address some of those social determinants of health. Or even in many cases, what we saw is a lot of people self-identifying challenges with anxiety, depression, post-traumatic stress disorder. And these folks can provide therapy and counseling to them straight through the application as well. And we plan to layer in a lot of additional levers for additional support for this group as we continue to listen to them.
And you're also in town, so we're able to speak together because you received an award. Congratulations. Can you tell us about the award?
Yeah, thank you. We launched a program at the end of 2024 with Molina Healthcare, who serves a Medicaid population in Ohio, so low-income individuals. And what we realized was that when somebody has an injury in that population and you can't go back to work or pay your rent before too long, you're homeless and there's all these challenges that come into focus very quickly based on a more challenging socioeconomic status. And so we launched a program with them to actually target and provide these resources to those members specifically who are at high risk. And it was an amazing program, so much so that the Ohio Association of Health Plans recognizes us with the Pinnacle Award for this innovative care delivery model and engaging high-need individuals within the Ohio community. So it's a tremendous honor this early in our sort of venture into this world and trying to make a difference to be recognized for that. And we are super proud of all the partners that came around, hospitals, insurance companies, community-based organizations that made that possible. And yeah, that was a very exciting accolade and recognition to receive this week. We are super proud.
And before we run out of time, how is your brother doing now?
My brother is great. He works at Tandem Stride. He was in the population health department at a level one trauma center. So he helps us understand hospital data and our user data to really understand the needs of people from somebody who's been in those shoes. He's happily married, has three beautiful children, and has done all the things that I remember him exclaiming he might not be able to do when he was in the hospital. So it's amazing to see that journey progress.
Well, and now he's sharing that with others.
Absolutely.
We've been talking with Matt Kalina, founder and CEO of Tandem Stride. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And coming up, we're going to learn about a prepared meal delivery program based in Central Ohio. That's when Fascinating Ohio from All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
You
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. This is Fascinating Ohio, a show from All Sides and WOSU, where we introduce you to people from the Buckeye State with an interesting story to tell. Healthy meal planning can be a challenge for people from all walks of life. From finding ingredients to simply finding the time to cook, there are many reasons why meal kits have become popular over the last few years. One such meal kit delivery service started right here in Columbus. It's called Lux & Lemon, a company which has succeeded by providing its clients with healthy, delicious meals for the last 7 years. Joining us today is Lux & Lemon CEO and founder, Catherine Brown. Welcome to All Sides, Kat.
Thank you for having me.
So how did you come up with this idea to make meal kits? Where did it come from?
So I grew up in a family of entrepreneurs. My family's Greek. Food is our love language. We would sit around the table every Sunday as an entire family and have dinner together. So I, you know, after college, I worked in commercial real estate in the development sector, and I could not shake culinary, just this love for culinary. And I had this idea. I was like, well, you know what? I'm going to take all my recipes. I'm going to put it on a recipe blog, and I'll, you know, create a business out of that. And my circle of friends, you know, they were really encouraged me. They were like, no, you have to cook the food. Nobody's going to cook it. Like, nobody has time to cook it. Everybody has wishful thinking that they will. You have to cook it. So I said, you know what? I'm just going to give it a shot. Let's try this. So that very first week, seven of my closest friends, they each ordered about seven meals each. So it's about 50 meals. And I just made them right from my apartment and gave it a whirl. And because I was going to do the recipe blog, I had a logo picked out. My background's in marketing and design. So I had this little logo, Lux & Lemons. I put it on mailing labels on top of the meals, and they took the meals into the break rooms at their offices. And what happened from there was pretty explosive.
Everyone who they ate lunch with wanted one.
Yes. They're like, what is that? Where is that from? And before I knew it, it was my friends, coworkers, sisters, neighbors, hairdresser. You know, it grew so fast. I was like, I'm just going to dive in. I'm going to dive in and I'm going to do it.
Well, how did you come up with the name? Where did that come from? Lux & Lemon? Because you said you had the name.
Yes, I thought long and hard on the name. Mm-hmm. The name, there was 100 different options before Lux & Lemons, but the name represented what I wanted the brand to be. And I wanted the brand to be luxury for the everyday person. So everyday person, you know, you don't need a private chef. You can't, a private chef is, you know, celebrity level, right? But what if you and I could have a private chef of some sort? So Lux represents the luxury. Lemons represents the everyday person.
Mm. Kind of making, also using lemons to make lemonade too.
A little bit of that too. Yes.
So you're not a trained chef though. It sounds like you're in marketing and real estate.
Correct.
So what is it like making up meals and cooking for people whenever you don't really have the background in it?
You know, I was really gifted in it. I couldn't tell you exactly how I learned to be as good as I am at cooking. I know definitely my family had influence in that. My family's Greek, so my Greek grandmothers and great aunts, like, they were just phenomenal cooks. And the second I could reach the counter, I was like, what are you doing up there? Can I see you? Teach me how to make that. I want to know how to make moussaka, you know? So I was learning all of these Greek recipes at a very young age, and I was always in the kitchen. I remember being a kid pretending to have a cooking show. Remember cooking shows?
Yeah.
And I would always have cooking shows on the TV. So I just had a love for it. And I grew the skills organically. And it actually is a blessing in disguise because it sets us apart from other companies, because our meals are like what mom would cook for you, you know, what you would cook for yourself. They're familiar. It doesn't taste exclusive. It tastes inclusive.
Do you have a favorite meal that you make?
Oh, my gosh. I have so many. But if I had to narrow it down, I think it would be our southern pulled pork. It's southern pulled pork with a house-made barbecue sauce. It's made from all clean ingredients, no refined sugars. And it's served with corn pudding and southern greens. And that's just, it's honest. It was one of the first couple meals on the menu in the very beginning.
So meal prep is a challenge for anyone, especially, you know, if you're busy, if you're working, if you have kids and you have running around to do. But, you know, but then you have to factor in health, too. So there's health, there's time management, there's meal prep. Tell me how your company makes a balance there for people.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a core pillar at Lux and Lemons. So we do that by taking all of the meals that we know and love, fried rice, lo mein, enchiladas, lasagna, and we make them from nutritionally dense ingredients, whole foods. So our kitchen is completely free from inflammatory oils, refined sugars. Everything is made from whole natural foods. A way that we do that as an example is our fried rice. I love chicken fried rice, but, you know, I'm not feeling that great after eating a big plate of chicken fried rice. So we take chicken fried rice, but instead of having all of the rice that you would normally have, we do half rice, half cauliflower rice. But the flavor of the sauce is so flavorful, and the elements of the veggies, you really can't tell that it's half cauliflower rice. So we like to play like magic tricks in that way.
And someone at home might not have the time to make two different kinds of rice and mix it together, right? So you're doing it for them.
Yes, yes, yes. Especially the sauces. Sauces take a lot of work, and all of ours are clean ingredient, really healthy sauces. So that makes a huge difference too.
This is Fascinating Ohio from All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about healthy meal planning with Lux and Lemons CEO Kat Brown. So on an average day, how many meals is your company making and sending out into the world?
We're doing about 3,000 to 4,000 meals a week. So it's quite a few.
Yeah. And you deliver in the whole Central Ohio area, is that
yes.
right?
Yes. Yep. Central Ohio and surrounding areas. So we go as far as Delaware County, down to Grove City, all the way out to Pataskala to West Jeff. So that whole circle, everything inside of it.
And yours are already prepared meals. This is not like you're giving everyone ingredients and they have to cook it. This is like heated up.
Yes, exactly. Yep. They're individually packaged. All of the nutrition information, allergens, ingredients are right there on the label. Heating instructions as well. So all you have to do is heat and eat. You have a meal ready to go in 2 to 3 minutes.
So people order one-off meals or you can order like a subscription. Is that
yes,
right?
Yes, you can do both. I really never wanted to have subscriptions as part of our offerings just because subscriptions are kind of annoying, in my opinion, having to remember to pause or cancel. So we're mainly a la carte, but by demand, we had a lot of people ask for subscriptions. They're like, I just want to set it and forget it. So we do offer 3 subscription options. Those come with 5 meals a week. You just sign up and 5 different meals come delivered to your doorstep every week. There's a balance option, balance meal plan. That's like all of our best sellers. Then there's our nourish, which is like a carb mindful, lower carb. And then foundations, which is gluten-free, dairy-free.
Okay. But then people can go on and like pick individual meals too.
Yes, absolutely.
Are you delivering to someone's house like a box that has several meals in it? Or is it sometimes it's one-off?
So it's on average, we have about 8 meals in an order. So, yeah, the box is you receive a box on your doorstep. It's fully insulated with ice packs and your meals are inside. If you wanted to try like 1 or 2 meals, that's an option. But we do have a minimum for delivery. It's $40. So most of those clients, they'll do pickup. There's no minimum pickup. And we're located in Grandview. So you can order like 1 or 2 meals as a pickup option. Pick it up Sunday night or Monday morning and try it out. See if you like it.
Now, what about the packaging? Because I've heard a lot about other meal kit companies. There's a lot of plastic and excessive packaging, especially those companies that where you make the food and it comes in all these little plastic pouches.
I know. Yeah. No, we having a low carbon footprint is very important to us. Our packaging is fully compostable and there's no plastic at all. So it's compostable paper trays. The seal, like the film on top, they're sealed, is made from sugar cane. So it's sustainable. And then our sleeves are made from recycled paper, and as are our boxes.
I also was reading online that you have, I wanted to say less sodium. Like the whenever you go to a grocery store and you buy a pre-made meal that has, you know, that has a little cellophane on top, you know, yours are much healthier than those. Tell me the difference. What's the difference?
Absolutely. So every plate, the goal is that it's balanced with macronutrients and micronutrients, meaning I want to make sure that it has an amount of calories that is sustainable. So an amount of calories is sustainable. Fat, carbohydrates, and protein, you want a nice ratio there. So you want about double the carbohydrates as the protein. We want at least 30 grams of protein in a meal, especially for women. That's a really good, at least minimum. You want to get about 100 grams of protein in a day at a minimum. Fat, we want somewhere around 20 grams of fat in a meal. That's like a nice balance of macronutrients. Fiber, we want 25 to 30 grams of fiber a day. That's really important to get that in. So in our meals, you'll see somewhere around 7-8 grams of fiber is the goal. And then sodium. As Americans, we eat a lot of sodium. And so sodium is something that we are super mindful of. The recommended amount of sodium a day is 2,000 milligrams. Now that depends on how active you are. So I wouldn't take that number right at face value. But for us, we want to be pretty right in the middle of what everybody needs. You know, of course, if you are very active and need more sodium, you can drink electrolytes or things like that. So for sodium, we want somewhere between 500 and 800 milligrams of sodium per meal.
Okay.
So nutrition is a huge, huge pillar. So, huge priority.
So a random box meal that I buy in the grocery store has way more than yours?
Yes.
So how do you get customers to pick your meals rather than the grocery store or another company? Why pick you?
Yeah, our brand, our attention to detail, and our obsession with the customer experience. We are obsessed with our customer. I really pride ourselves on our customer service. If you ever get to engage with our customer service, you... like, it's just such a treat. Mm-hmm. We really do very, very well in customer service. Everybody feels valued, heard, seen. But we want that to not only be at that stop in the user journey all the way from the beginning. When you get on our website, I know that people are overloaded, overstimulated, just looking for a reprieve or some like extra sliver to add time back into their day. So the user experience on our website is very simple. It's very minimal. It's not overstimulating. And then from there, the meals, every picture of a meal on our website is exactly how you're going to receive it. If that garnish of parsley is in the center of that plate, when you receive your meal, that garnish of parsley is going to be exactly in the center of your plate. We are so obsessed with the details because we want the customer to experience that luxury.
Are they frozen or is this refreshed?
Fresh.
Fresh. Okay.
Fresh, made to order.
Okay. So how long, if I'm ordering, you know, above 40 to get the free delivery, how long do I have to eat it?
So the ordering window closes Thursday nights at midnight. Mm-hmm. I think today is Thursday, actually. So Thursday nights at midnight. The new menu will open tomorrow, Friday morning. So the menu runs Friday morning to Thursday night. Mm-hmm. So as long as you place your order Thursday night by midnight, your order will be ready Sunday. Whether you want delivery or pickup, that's up to you. We also have a Monday pickup option for people who might be traveling. But once you get your meals on Sunday, they last all the way through Friday.
Okay.
So they're sealed. There's no oxygen getting into the container. So
refrigerated, they're good for the week.
Good for the week. Frozen, a lot of people will bulk order their favorites because the menu changes every week. And so they'll put them in the freezer. And in the freezer, they last 3 months.
Okay. And there's a lot of dietary restrictions out there. How do you deal with that as a small company? Do you have meals for everyone?
Yes. We try our very best to have variety for everybody. And going back to those meal plans, that's also part of why they exist, because I know that some people come to our page and they're like, I just need gluten-free, dairy-free. I have a gluten allergy. I have a dairy allergy. I don't want to think. You can order that. But you can also filter all the meals. So you can filter by vegetarian, low sodium, gluten-free, dairy-free, pretty much any kind of restriction, low carb, any kind of dietary restriction or allergy you're looking for. And on our product pages, all of the ingredients and allergens are listed too, as well as nutrition information. So that way it gives you peace of mind.
All right. So I read you were hoping to expand.
Yes.
So tell me about that.
Yes. So I'll spare you the details, but there's a very lengthy process to go over state lines. You have to make your production facility USDA certified. So we're in the process of exploring that. But for now, our next expansion steps are Cincinnati and Cleveland. So we really want to break into those markets. Columbus, I feel, is so similar to Cincinnati and Cleveland. It's that, you know, similar like Midwest vibe. So that is our plan, to expand into those two cities the next year.
Would you still use your same kitchen here in Columbus?
Yes.
And just drive the meals further?
Yep. So we would utilize refrigerated trucks. You know, it's not too far of a drive, 2 hours. So drive them up to Cleveland or down to Cincinnati and do a nice long delivery route for the day.
How many employees do you have working for you now?
40.
40. You'll have to expand if you're going to grow.
Yes. And that's another thing I pride myself on is we keep all of our delivery drivers in-house. Like, I want you to have the Lux and Lemons experience all the way to your doorstep. You're not going to get that if I send it to you via UPS. You know, our drivers we'll have like elderly clients that'll leave a note like, I can't pick up the box. Like they'll know like to ring the doorbell and wait and like lift the box, make sure they are able to carry it inside. So yeah, all the way to the door. We want you to have the best experience.
Well, we have less than a minute left, but how does it feel to have a business like this and just and to be able to expand? And did you ever think that was this ever the dream?
It was from the beginning. Yeah, I've always been a big dreamer. It feels so good. And honestly, what feels better is getting to share it with the amazing team that Lux & Lemons has organically built over the years.
Well, congratulations on the business. Good
Thank
luck
you.
With the expansion.
Thank you.
We've been talking about healthy meal kits delivered right to your door from Lux and Lemons with CEO Kat Brown. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And this has been Fascinating Ohio from all sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Juravich. If you missed any part of today's show or any show, you can go to our website, wosu.org/allsides. Subscribe to our podcast. You can also find us in the free WOSU mobile app. Be sure to like the show on Facebook and follow the show on Instagram. You can see behind-the-scenes pictures. Our Instagram handle is @AllSidesWOSU. Thanks for joining us today on 89.7 NPR News.
On Saturday,